Good morning, church. I'm Kimmy, and this is my family.
Closer, closer. Mom.
We love our church, and we do our best to help and support it in the best ways that we know how. And we do this as a family. When one of us is asked to help, or one of us is asked for ideas or suggestions, we usually end up meeting as a group just to talk about it. We discuss different ideas. They get tossed around. We talk about different things that just get hashed out, basically, and they just kind of come together. What happens a lot of times is that we will just may have this discussion at the dinner table. And when we're there, if you were a fly on the wall and you were to hear us talking, you would hear things like, what's our budget? What time are we serving? Or what? How many people are we serving? Or as I like to say to them, what's our magic number? It's then that our ideas start to come together, and it's then that our ideas just come together, and it sounds kind of dramatic, but it's not as dramatic as it really is. It's not that dramatic, basically. It's just a process that we've developed over the years.
Hi, my name is Ones. If she's nervous, I'm more nervous. We started attending LSUC in 1995. And as our kids were getting into their teens, we wanted to get them involved in the church. And the more we thought about it and talked about it, the more certain we felt that if we wanted them to be involved, we ourselves needed to be involved. So in about 2002, we volunteered to be leaders of the Pathfinder Club. We did that for a few years. And in about 2004, we started helping in planning the youth retreats with Pastor Devo and Lailani. We had great times imagining, dreaming youth ministry with them. And for the most part, the theme of these activities was food and entertainment, because we firmly believed that if you feed them, they will come. We were also involved with VBS, and we were doing a lot of different things, but in about 2004, 5, 2006, Pastor Chris and us, we couldn't determine the actual timing. We intentionally chose, or we intentionally decided to help in the kitchen, preparing the volunteers' dinner every day. And through the years, this past decade or so, we've had very good support and help from friends like the Amayas, John Martins, the Camachos, Cortez, Bob and Maggie Woosley, and Aaron. And lately, we had the Anakayas. And of course, we have Kimmy's brother, Ken Cantos and his family. And we had a great time doing all this with them. We currently serve in the social committee, and we are very delighted and proud to be able to help in the promotion of the social aspect of church life. Now our kids are a little bit older. Well, they're a lot older, really. You know, they have their own lives now, they have their own schedules, but Kimmy and I are extremely proud and happy to know and to see that they've stuck around and that we're still able to do church together as a family. And these are our kids.
Well, most of you may know me already by face, if not by name. I'm Christopher. I'm the firstborn of the siblings. And I'll make one confession now. I am a foodie. And as a foodie, I like to share my foodieism. From its start in 2010, I believe that's the right year, Cafe started, October 2010. So this October makes 7 years. I've been asked to help with Cafe. It's been a very roller coaster ride of things, but I've enjoyed it a lot, and it's been very fulfilling. I get to promote a very simple yet powerful expression of community and service, ultimately being hospitality. I never really questioned why pastoral staff had asked me to be involved with the ministry, but it kind of, as preparing for today, it kind of comes down to this one concept for me, and that is, it's an expression of love and thanks through the service I provide and the food that is served. And so I operate the cafe on Sabbath mornings. Come on by, grab a little muffin, cup of coffee or tea, whatever your preference is. I know some of the regulars. I'll have it ready for you as you walk up. But growing up, doing food, might help my mom in the kitchen, start with chopping things, putting in bowls, move up to stirring pots and pans, to now we're kind of at, you get a phone call, and what are you cooking for dinner? So, you know, that goes on. But I also learned to use food as an expression of thanks from my dad. And he often will say, oh, I've taken my guy, one of my guys out to lunch because he's been doing a good job, or buying lunch for the group because, you know, to keep morale up. At the end of the day, for me, being part of this family, what being a mallet is like with all our foodie-ism stuff, it just means being present at the table, sitting there and listening to everyone else's day and telling about your own, to laugh and poke fun at each other, but also provide some input to other people's problems, even though you didn't realize you had one. But the real discussions, like my mom was saying, begin kind of there at the dinner table about what the next event is. And it really, gears get shifted into place once there's a date for the next church event. So that's one of the ways that I like to express my caring and thanks for my church family, through the food that Cafe is able to serve.
I guess it's my turn. Hello. If you guys don't know who I am, don't worry, you're not the only one. My name is Andrew, and I am the middle child. Yep. If you guys don't know I have middle child syndrome, very, 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 very bad. And I think I've realized it since I was, you know, yay high. If you guys don't know what middle child syndrome is, it's being the middle child. I usually explain it by when growing up, being with my sister and my brother, everybody would always go to my brother and be like, oh, you're getting so big, you're getting so tall. They go to my sister, she's the youngest daughter. Oh, you're so cute. Oh, they come to me, what's your name again? So that I'm not saying that just for you guys to feel bad for me or anything like that, which I am, but for the real most part is that's my role in the family. let's see. Professionally, I have been in x-ray tech for maybe like the last 10 years, but I decided I got the calling to go back to school. I'm back at Loma Linda in the physician assistance program. So pray for me, I got one more year. My role here at the church, though, is a little bit different. They call me the gopher, and I'm not talking about the little fuzzy rodent. How can I explain this? Usually when we're doing an event, they would say, Andrew, hey, can you go for that? Hey, can you go for this? I usually just take orders. So they call me the gopher because I just go over there, they do that, and I go over there and I do that. That's my role. I guess I follow orders well, and they seem to trust me with those orders, so that's what I do. I'm kind of like the sidekick, you know, the Robin to the Batman, the Luca Brasi to the Don Corleone. Oh, people got that one.
Hey.
The goose to the maverick. Yeah, right? But yeah, to be a mallet for me is to give more than you receive, to know your role and to do your role well. My mom knows how to cook. My brother knows how to cook. They cook. I know how to go follow orders. I follow orders. So, and so far, it's been working out pretty well. So, thank you.
A different platform for me this morning. My name is Kayla. I pastor down in Bonita Valley, Seventh-day Adventist Church in San Diego. And I am the pride and the joy of the Mallet family. If you are wondering who Batman is, it's me. I'm just kidding. Mom's Batman. Don't have any questions about that. I am the youngest and the only girl, so pride and joy, youngest, only girl, pretty much the same thing, right? And I know that I've preached sermons on identity, and there's this question of nature versus nurture, and nature, well, you made me that way, right? Nurture, you made me that way. Both end up being me being awesome. I'm just kidding. On a serious note, I grew up in this wonderful family with a full support system. There's not a big age difference between me and my siblings, but it was enough for me to feel like a princess growing up, to feel like there was wonderful support every step of my life. And so oftentimes, as this spoiled brat that I was, I would call on the way home from school and say, XYZ, five people are coming over for dinner. Is that okay? Well, we're already on our way. And so Christopher would call Andrew, or Mom would call Christopher, and they would figure it out. And while you're on your way home, can you pick this up? No, I have guests. You don't want me to treat my guests that way, right? You guys do the cooking. I will take all of the cooking. But when I was shipped off to a galaxy far, far away, namely Berrien Springs, Michigan, I missed Mom's cooking. And so I was forced, but very, very determined, to learn how to recreate those meals that I so was homesick for. And so I spent a few years sending them pictures of times when, did I get it right? Does this look like the right texture? Does it look like the right color? And they would say, not enough red, not enough green, not enough this, not enough that. And I'm happy to say that now, coming from San Diego, when I want to use Mom's free laundry and their free water for better showers than I get in my apartment, I am glad to be able to say, for so many years, you guys have supported me and given me everything that I have a chance to cook a meal. So for me, what it means to be a mallet is that you have to answer the same question multiple times, because everybody will know what's going on in your life. It means that you get to have these wonderful moments, though, where you don't have to worry about any worries or cares because you'll have people behind you. So on those days and on those nights when I'm homesick for my favorite people, I get to come up and I get to know that there will be a meal that I will be able to share with my family that will not only satisfy my stomach, but satisfy my heart. Thank you.
Well, one of the ways we instilled family values within our kids was to enjoy a large meal together for dinner. Hearty dinners is not only a Filipino custom, but it is a Malit tradition. It is during these times that we not only catch up on each other's day, but truly bring everything to the table. It was a pleasure bringing the Malit family, a small glimpse of the Malit family's kitchen and life to you, and we thank you.
We thank you. We thank you. We thank you, the Malit family. Probably of all of the faces that you see this summer, when you looked at the screenshot of church members who will be sharing their stories, of all of those faces, the Malits were the most hesitant. What do you want to hear from us for? They didn't mention when they cook for Vacation Bible School this next week. This will be about year 13, I think. They're going to cook for 200 people every night. They didn't tell you that, did they? Right? They didn't tell you that when we have our big brunch on Silent Sabbath weekend, on 4 days with Jesus weekend, that when we tell them maybe 600, 700 people, that they cook for 1,000. They didn't tell you that, right? They didn't, all those small details. Yes, Christopher, since 2010, you've been leading the cafe. Since 2010, every single Sabbath, he's had cafe on his mind. Can you imagine that ministry? They didn't tell you those details. I have a text for your family. This is the, there were many to think about from Scripture, but this is the one, Onus and Kimmy. The Son of Man came eating and drinking. And they say, here's a glutton and a drunkard, a friend of tax collectors and sinners. The Son of Man comes eating and drinking, and they begin the name calling. I don't know, I think you're in good company. Where there is food and a table, there is Jesus. Where there is food and a table, there's the Malits. For Jesus, where there was food and a table and drink, people began to name call him. The Son of Man came eating and drinking, and they say, here is a glutton, a drunkard, a friend of tax collectors. This is at least the claim this morning, friends, that I want to talk about for the next 15 minutes. This is the claim of the gossip network. They're burning the midnight oil. You see, they're not simply accusing Jesus here of being a bad guest, rude, bad manners. Jesus, the one who comes to the party and eats the food but never brings the food, Kayla. They're not accusing Jesus of that. They're not saying he crashes their parties. It's personal. This is name-calling now of Jesus. He's a drunkard. The rumors turned personal. If John the Baptist has a reputation for fasting, Jesus has a reputation for feasting. And it's catching up with him. A drunkard and a glutton. This is what we got. But this, inside of this criticism, there is a kernel of wisdom if we work it from the backside. He's a friend of tax collectors and sinners, and this is the rumor now that's gotten around. He's made friends with all the wrong people, and the way he made friends was probably by sharing a table. And if he shared a table, then they probably ate and drank, and Jesus is probably a glutton and a drunkard. This is where his friendships were forged. So there's a kernel of truth here. And it's only a few small steps then before all the gossip networks spreads and there's a bad word about Jesus. We're only a few chapters into Matthew's story this afternoon. You see Matthew chapter 11. It's just been a little while since the Sermon on the Mount fell on their ears, that manifesto that said, those who are in poverty and those who are lonely and those who are excluded and those who mourn, those have the blessing of the divine, and don't be surprised when they turn up in your fellowship. They've just heard that teaching. And then Jesus says, by the way, you're the salt and the light. Don't be saltless salt. Don't be a failing light, which we have heard over the centuries, kind of with evangelistic ears, right? Add Christians to God's world and the world is a better place. Be salt and light. But I wonder if it's much more simple, practical, basic. You cannot have a meal without salt. You cannot have a home and entertain people without someone turning on the lamp. For Jesus' community, salt not only fertilized the soil, but it was fuel for the fire, and it preserved the food, and it seasons the food. And you can't move around your small one-room home or the courtyard between your homes without a light. You can't welcome anyone without a salt and light. I wonder if Jesus, when he says, don't be saltless salt and a failing lamp, if it's much more basic and practical. Welcome people to your homes. The gospel takes off. Jesus now sends the disciples on the road with this instruction. Don't take any supplies with you, no food, no extra gear, no blankets, coats, weapons. Go to the next town and where they will give you a welcome, stay with them and eat their food. And if someone gives you a cold cup of water, remember that because I'll remember that, Jesus says. And the story takes off now in Matthew's gospel. Jesus heals, casts out some demons, heals, casts out some demons. The cycle repeats like this in those chapters here. And we can also assume that everyone Jesus touches, for every life he touched, he's had supper with that family and their friends, stitching together a society, stitching together a society. So the rumor, he's making friends with all the wrong people. The Son of Man came eating and drinking. He's probably a drunkard and a glutton. We needed a Messiah. We needed a Redeemer. We needed a Savior. We needed a solution. And we got a guy who takes supper around tables scattered throughout the kingdom. This is the accusation. Matthew and Luke both carry the same accusation. It's an ancient ritual, this idea of hospitality, that we would welcome someone into our space. It's not the word we hear today for the hospitality industry, right? That's where you pay a fee for a service, the hotel industry or the restaurants we go to this week. It's not the same word in ancient times. Hospitality, it's more raw than that, and you give without expecting to get in return. Ancient hospitality, many of the places where your families are from around the globe, there's ancient hospitality practices, probably for the Malots. Probably for the Malans, the ancient hospitality came to them through their home in the Philippines, right? Here's their province. You see that little dot on the map? This is their home province. Am I pronouncing correctly, Onas? Pampanga? Is that pretty good for a white girl? Pampanga? And we'll zoom in a little more. This is where both of your parents are from. So we are we're in that red region in the southern part, where around San Fernando. Both your moms are from this part of the Philippines. Families, right? Kimmy and Onas met because Kimmy's family, her dad, was stationed in the Philippines. Kimmy will tell you, I'm very American. I only met Onas because we lived in the Philippines for a little while. But the people who live in their province in this region, you know what they're known for? That's it. Your Filipino family members answered. This is where the cooks live. If you're from this region, you probably cook. There's gossip and a rumor about you, too. Oh, there are probably gluttons and drunkards. Yeah, the ancient ritual of hospitality probably comes to the Malot family in a very authentic way. So that when they come to the States and they marry, it's a young married Onas and Kimmy. Onas tells Kimmy, you know, I'm bringing people home. We're going to have guests. Oh, dear, I hope that's okay. Do we have food? Yeah, they come by it naturally. Kimmy learned. It didn't take you too long to probably learn. You needed to stock up your cupboard, so that guy's going to invite people home, right? So by the time they join our church, and this is the kids they bring into our community. Can we turn the lights down for a minute? Because it's just an adorable factor. This is only one picture, Kayla. We won't put up any others. That just the one. Isn't that fantastic? Who would have known? By the time they bring these three children and they begin to raise them in our community here, that ancient practice of hospitality and the ritual from grandparents and great-grandparents, it's deep in their home and it's what they bring to us. It's not the hospitality that we think of in the world, a fee for service. This is something I'm calling deep and radical hospitality, friends. And for some reason, over the years, over the generations, over the centuries, this kind of hospitality is disappearing. For those early generations after Jesus, what set the disciples apart from the rest of the world where much hospitality was practiced, what set the disciples apart was that they would welcome strangers. This is different than the party you had for the 4th of July where you had the gang over, right? No, what set Christians, that's fine, that's good, enjoy that, but what set Christians apart was strangers got the welcome. And as time moved on, somehow that practice of strangers fell away. You can take them off the screen. They're dying over here, Kirby. Thank you. That practice falls away as the centuries move on, and it's an interesting question. Why did that happen? How is it that Christians fell out of the practice of welcoming strangers? Well, time changed and shifts, and pretty soon there are hostels and inns that are built and hospitals, and life is compartmentalized, and then commerce comes, and specializations come, and kind of fragmented living comes, and then before you know it, if you need a place to stay for the night, you'll pay the innkeeper. And the only people left are those who would fall through the cracks if you can't pay for the service. There's now the church, the safety net for the widows and the orphans and the people whose bodies don't work fully. That's where hospitality finally settled, right? If you want to read more about this, and there's probably one person here that does, I recommend this book, Making Room, Recovering Hospitality as a Christian Tradition by Christine Pohl. It's fascinating to understand how we fell out of this tradition of welcoming strangers. But add this now to the reality of our world, our fearful world, friends, where we are cued to be afraid when someone sneezes and we lock our doors and we hunker down and we hang on to what is familiar. There are many other options, many other responses to terror in our world. We become afraid. It can be a full-time job keeping the wrong people out. The ancient biblical Christian practice of hospitality, how do you recover that in our world today? And can I add one more complication here? See, sometimes Jesus is the guest, and sometimes he's the host. Sometimes he's the needy guest in the stories in the gospel, and sometimes he hosts the extravagant supper meal, and we never really know the difference. It's brilliant. Who needs the gathering more, the one who's hosting or the one who's being served? We never really know the answer to that in the gospel stories. It's clever. Serve and be served. See every person, dignity for every person, everyone shoulder to shoulder around the table. That's where the dignity of a person matters. Hospitality, not a nice extra additional thing you do. It's not just something you do because you can cook like the mallets. Hospitality isn't what we do, it's who we are. It's who we are. How do we recover that ancient practice, La Sierra? It's a serious question I'm asking in today's world. Hospitality. A basic way of breaking down barriers, breaking through relationships, transcending our social differences. They're small acts. They're small acts. I want to ask the question, what are then the barriers that make hospitality so difficult for us? Oh, I don't know, how about living in the city of Riverside where you're asked to report your neighbors who are firing illegal fireworks? Because that's so neighborly this week. Did any of you turn people in? Did you make some money? Was it $1,000, $1,200? What was it? I mean, the city was serious, weren't they? Yeah, that's the culture in which now I'm asking the question, how do you recover ancient hospitality? And what are the barriers? Some of the barriers, well, obviously time and resources and energy, right? We cannot be all things to all people. We understand this. Some of the barriers are scarcity, that idea that there's not enough in the world, and so we hoard. Some of the barriers, how about just awkwardness? I want to pause on awkwardness. Is it awkward to welcome a stranger? Is it only me that finds it awkward? We had several groups in our house over the years, right? But one of the groups that I want to mention, and we'll illustrate this with the Mallett family in a moment here. One of the groups, we are young and we're in medical school, and it's a potluck, and you know how that is. Everybody brings something, you put it together, and then you have your feast, and you open the Bible, and you study together. But in this particular potluck, I want to show you the groceries that showed up on my kitchen table, and it was at our house, and what you see is exactly everything that came. A can of corn. That came from one family. A bag of lima beans. Do you love them? No, right? Come on, what in the world do you do with these things? Like 33% of you are happy so far. Keep in mind, I'm from the Northwest. We don't open cans of corn. We husk it in September and we freeze it and eat it all year. I don't think I had ever opened a can of corn. Can of corn, a bag of lima beans, a bottle of Sunny Delight. This came to our potluck on this Friday night. And a loaf of bread. It was decent bread, not the cheap kind. That was good. What does that make? What are you serving the people, friends? Is that awkward? And we go to the back room, my husband and I. I'm like 21, 22 years old. We're poor. Did I say that yet? We're poor. What in the world do we feed them now? You know the stone soup book with the old woman and the stone and the water? Mallets, come on up. Here's the challenge. You have 5 minutes. These are your ingredients. Cheer them on. You're going to have to cheer them on because you saw how timid they were to be up front. They have 5 minutes when they all get in position, and they're going to figure out what in the world you do with lima beans, a can of corn, and a loaf of bread. If anyone can do this, the Mallett family can. And you tell me when you're ready. Oh, we let Ken into the party. This is Kimmy's brother, Ken Kantos. If you've eaten anything here, Ken has been involved. All right, at some point in time, we might have to cheer them on, so I'll let you know when that is. Let's count them down. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go. Go, go, go. Now, they have a pantry, because you would have a pantry in your house, right? So in the pantry over here are just the basic things. Most of them on their own don't make a meal. There's a produce basket that's got onions, and potatoes, and real corn, God's corn, right? Corn doesn't come in a can. Garlic, there's chilies, because some of you are from this part of the world, amen? There's mangoes, and limes, and lemons, and you don't want any of what's in my hand. They're off and running, can you see them? Because how much time do we have? 4 minutes. All right. I have the countdown here. We're at 4 minutes now. So there's some produce, potatoes. There is plenty of seasonings here because you would have that in your cupboard, right? You would go to your seasoning cupboard and get out whatever goodies you need special to make it taste special. There's honey and there's all kinds of nuts. You can have pecans and almonds and all kinds of nuts. A can of Big Franks because who doesn't have that in their cupboard? You have that. There's breadcrumbs and those kinds of staples, a box of celery. You can have that, Big Franks. Because who doesn't have a box of Special K in their cupboard, Adventist Christian? Right? There's pasta and crackers. There's tofu. Someone's happy. This is about as good as the lima beans in my book. This is kind of put the lima beans and the tofu in a stir fry and let's just die now. Let's just die. There are tortillas. Don't you just open these and eat them? Oreo cookies. There's Oreo cookies and there's butter and we're at 2.5 minutes. I'm trying to figure, okay, the skillet's on. Mm-hmm. There's bread in the skillet and there's butter in the skillet and like they are so focused. You're not even talking to each other. This is your brother over here on your left. We have peppers, red peppers and green peppers and garlic and bread and onions and Chris has got salt and Adventists don't eat pepper, so we didn't see that go in. And we're at 2 minutes. Have you figured out what you would make? You have a bag of lima beans, you have a can of corn, you have a loaf of bread. What in the world are you making? You figured it out. They said you could make succotash. If you don't like lima beans, what are you going to do with succotash? See, I thought they were going to make egg rolls.
So good.
There's my stereotype. I gave them egg roll wrappers and rice. I figured we're going to get, you know, nice fried rice. And maybe we'll get a wonton or something. Maybe you chop up a Big Frank and... Oh, you can't deep fry. See? These are the problems. If you could deep fry, you would have made a wonton, wouldn't have you? Yeah, see? But this is what hospitality is. You go into crisis mode because you have people to feed and you got to keep smiling while you're doing it. I don't know if you can see Ken Cantos's face, but he is so serious.
Yeah.
As if he's in the lab at work, like diagnosing something. And you guys are at a minute and, you know, because God is generous, we'll be generous if we need to be. I can smell some food, can you yet? I can smell a little bit.
Here's the plate.
We're gonna need a taste tester. Who's that going to be? All right, you're up, Patty. I saw your hand first. All the way from Guam, a taste tester. You know it's gonna be tasty. If the mallet's cooked it, you don't even care. You don't even care. Do you like lima beans?
I love lima beans.
Oh, stop it, go sit back down. No, I'm joking. What would have you made?
With lima beans?
Yeah.
I just eat them.
Oh, no. It's a party with people. Here's what I was going to do. I was going to mash them up with the avocado. Why not? Mash them, right? Like you're going to make a bean dip out of them and add avocado. Why are you frowning?
I'd make a salad.
No.
Corn and put in nuts.
Okay, so she's gotten a salad. We're at zero. We're gonna see how you guys are doing. You need another minute?
Yeah.
We're gonna clap you on. We're gonna give you 1 minute.
1 minute? Yeah.
Go ahead, yeah? Go ahead. They're almost there.
I think you're gonna like these lima beans.
I just saw mushrooms.
Yeah, we do.
That's a problem. I don't like mushrooms. Oh, like it's even on a plate and everything. It's going to be beautiful. Your crowd is cheering for you, mallets. Your people are with you. They're almost there. Oh, we're really almost there. Wow, is the camera catching that? Not quite.
Good.
Maybe they cut the lima beans small so you can't pick it.
A little more salt.
salt for finishing. Did you see that pro move? Finishing salt. Are you done? Ta-da! We're going to hold it while you taste it, Patty. Here, we're going to give you a knife and a fork, and we're going to hold it.
It's a crostini.
It's a crostini.
Okay, I was born in India, and I stink while I eat with my hands.
Oh, you want to eat with your hands? Fine. She was born in India. I got a long explanation. She wants to eat with her hands. It's a crostini, and if I'm correct...
Can they see how beautiful it is?
It's got lima beans and mushrooms and garlic and onion and lots of peppers. It does actually smell really good, even though the lima beans are staring at you. It smells really good.
Mm.
It's good?
Mm. Divine. Mm.
It's good?
Really good.
Oh, do you guys want to taste what you made? I'll give it back to you.
Oh. It's really good.
Yeah. Fantastic. Take it with you. Take it with you.
Oh.
You can take the whole thing.
Oh, thanks.
Yay! Bravo! Bravo! Bravo, Chris. I would not have done that if the pastor asked me. Weren't they brave? I mean, that was a real meal. That's a real meal. What she walked away with is food you would serve to a guest who didn't have the courtesy to bring real food to your table. Tell me the truth. You have to get over this kind of awkward. Because when we invite people into our space that we don't know what they're going to bring, and we don't know what they're going to say, and we don't know the ideas, the political ideology necessarily in their minds. Tell the truth about the awkwardness of the hospitality of Jesus. When people come into our space, when we are shoulder to shoulder, we have to figure out how to navigate that awkwardness without asking, what will I get in return? By holding my tongue, I don't get to go in the other room and grumble and my children hear all that fallout. And how is that hospitality? I have to navigate all the awkwardness that comes with it. Another group of students who ate at our house, medical students years ago, the meal is all done. They're going home on a Friday night. We did the cooking. This group of three students lingered. We couldn't figure out what they wanted. Maybe they need a place to stay. Finally, at the front door, they're wringing their hands like this, and they said to us, "It was such a lovely meal. It would be a perfect meal if we could have all the leftovers." Because that would make a beautiful Sabbath lunch. And I'm thinking, but that's our Sabbath lunch. No, you can't have all my leftovers. As I go back to the kitchen and pack up all the leftovers and give them away and close the door, what the world was that? Tell the truth, friends, this is what how it challenges us. We have to dig deep. We have to dig deep. To do the kind of ancient hospitality that represents Jesus. I'm fairly certain today I'm not the only one. I don't care. Order pizza. You don't want to do what the mallets did? Pick up the phone and order pizza, right? Figuring this out, how to have people in our space. We accept that we're going to give without asking what we get in return, without asking what's in it for me. It's awkward and it's mundane and it can be troublesome and risky and time-consuming, this kind of hospitality. Ask yourselves the same question. How is it in your family you plan to put on display the full embrace of God? The mallets do it by cooking. And you sit down at their table and they cook you some chicken and some rice. And you look at their faces and all of a sudden you feel yourself at home. And before you know it, all of your stuff is on their table. ask yourself in your own homes. This is kind of the family meeting kind of conversation. To exercise the hospitality of God is an intentional movement that comes again and again every day. It means as a family, we won't do some other things because exercising the hospitality of God is our priority. Have your family meeting and ask yourselves the question, how will we show the warm, welcoming, wide embrace of God? Rearrange our lives. Can that ancient practice, friends, survive in today's world? It's a real question. That people can be seen, that we can know their names, that we can be shoulder to shoulder, that the welcome of God can be so safe, their lives can be on display. I was driving around San Bernardino this week, and I saw a man, and I realized what he's doing. He's going to go car to car, fast food, ask for some food. I was studying these passages. Jesus is a drunkard and a glutton. And somehow it got to me, Kimmy and Onis. I decided I'm going to go to the guy first, because he's going to come to me eventually. I'm just going to go to him first. So I drove over, got out of my car, said to the guy, I'm going to have a cup of coffee out in San Bernardino. I'm going to go sit to the hospital. I'm going to stop, have a cup of coffee. Did you want a cup of coffee this morning? He's got his face down. He says, yes, ma'am. I said, fantastic. Let me get some coffee. Let's have some coffee. What's your name? And he won't tell me his name. And his face is down. And I say to him, would it be all right if you looked at me? Is it okay if we look at each other? I waited and I waited and I waited. My name is Chris. What's your name? Jenkins. My name's Jenkins. Happy to meet you, Jenkins. Do you want to have a cup of coffee? Yes, ma'am. You know everything in your mind. You want to wash your hand right now. Tell the truth, friends. Tell the truth. This kind of hospitality, shoulder to shoulder, dignity. I see you, you see me. We're in God's world together. What can we do for one another? This is hard work. It's Annie Dillard who helps us not get too far ahead of ourselves when she says, the way we spend our days is the way we spend our lives. The way we spend our days. So think about today and tomorrow, a day at a time, the way the La Sierra community spends our days. Invested in hospitality is the way the La Sierra community will spend our life. Thank you, Mallet family, that you give us a little glimpse into this generous welcome of God, that you make it look so simple and fun and engaging that we want to come straight into your home every single time. Jesus, he's a drunkard and a glutton, and he eats with all the wrong people. You need a mission statement for your home? There's one. In the name of God, our Creator, Jesus, our Redeemer, the Holy Spirit, our guide. Amen.